Mark Maron. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's 6 past the hour, and this is the best of Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. How are you? It's Morning Sedition. We're broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down, man. We're giving away coffee and prizes. Pro wrestler Mick Foley's going to be here. Comedian Mike B., best-selling author Bret Easton Ellis is going to be joining us. Mark Riley's here. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
I'm looking at this menu, man. This menu is insane.
Yeah, it is.
You got to come down, you guys. If you're out there listening, come down. Chicken and waffles. We got
salmon croquettes,
boneless ribeye steak and waffles. What am I going to eat? Bacon. I think I'm going to. It's time for a meat relapse. That's what. It's time for me to have a meat relapse. The vegetarian thing goes down the toilet today, Riley.
Right, then they got vegetarian stuff in here.
I don't care. I want to do it.
Oh, you want to do it?
I'm ready to eat meat again.
Well, start light, man. Start with some salmon croquettes.
Look at old Rich. He's like, is this going to be free? It's Rich Two Bagels over there. He's like, is it free waffles?
No bagels up here, Rich.
Of them. So how you doing, Riley?
I'm
What's
doing
going
great,
on?
Man. I feel great to be in Harlem.
Yeah? You lived here for a while. Is that true?
I lived on 141st Street, yes.
Well,
Loved it up here.
Give us a little back-in-the-day history of the area.
All right, back-in-the-day history. 100 years ago, Harlem was farmland and had been farmland since the 17th century. And what happened was black people had gotten stuck in both Hell's Kitchen and San Juan Hill, which is the area just west of what's now Lincoln Center. Mm. And there had been race riots, very ugly race riots in both those communities right around the turn of the century. And at the same time, as they were building the what's now the Lenox Avenue subway in this community, people began to build in anticipation of people moving. And then there was a speculative bust, and nobody was moving up here.
Mm-hmm.
So this one real estate speculator decided to rent to blacks, because at that time, blacks couldn't live in most places in New York. So people flooded out of San Juan Hill and began moving to Harlem. And that, by 1920, it was a predominantly black community.
Wow. See, it's weird. I didn't know we were going to go that far back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought we were going to go through dance period, but the way back in the day. Well, that's interesting. Let's start talking about Cindy Sheehan, because I think it's important that people know that she has left the Crawford Ranch. She has left her post outside of Crawford, 5 miles outside of Crawford, because her mother had a stroke, so she went to Los Angeles to be with her mother. And, you know, it's weird, as horrible as it sounds, my first instinct when I heard that Cindy Sheehan had to go to Los Angeles because her mother was sick is like, what did Karl Rove do to her mother? You know, how did this happen? But apparently, what is happening there is that people are staying on. There are many families of veterans of kids who were lost in the war that are staying on in Crawford. We hope that plenty of people are still staying on because the fight still goes on. This afternoon, there's a statement by Cindy Sheehan that she released yesterday. Quote, this afternoon, around 4 p.m. Crawford time, my sister Dee Dee received a call that our mother has had a stroke and is in the emergency room at a hospital in Los Angeles. As you can imagine, this is a devastating blow for my sister, my brother, my children, and me. I'm leaving Crawford temporarily to go be with my mother. While I am gone, the other mothers of fallen soldiers in Iraq, along with the Iraq War veterans and other soldiers, will remain at Camp Casey and keep up the pressure on the president to meet with us and answer questions about the war.
Yeah.
So that's going to continue. The fight continues down there. So obviously we're not going to be talking to Cindy this morning, but I'm glad that people are going to stay there and continue the protest.
Yes, absolutely. And our best wishes go to her mother for a full and complete recovery as well.
What's starting to be interesting to me, though, Riley, is that the Republicans are starting to panic, and I think it's beautiful. It's really an amazing thing what Cindy Sheehan has did. In their inability to really criticize her because she is a genuine person with a real grief, they have not been able to slander her, though Rush Limbaugh tried. If you want to hear that from yesterday, listen to this.
I mean, Cindy Sheehan is just Bill Burkett. Her story is nothing more than forged documents. There's nothing about it that's real, including the mainstream media is glomming onto it. It's not real. It's nothing more than an attempt. It's the latest effort made by the coordinated left.
What an ass. I can't stand that guy.
He's a moron.
But he started backpedaling yesterday. He started completely backpedaling on this thing, and it was beautiful because it's very clear what he said on that tape. And apparently, here's a quote from Rush Limbaugh yesterday. Quote, apparently what's out there is that I said that Cindy Sheehan is no different than Bill Burkett, that Bill Burkett lied and Cindy Sheehan lied. That's what it sounded like to me. Didn't it sound like that to you? Right. So, and then he says, so the idea that I think that she's making it all up is just another sign of the desperation of the people on the left who love to take us all out of context to try to get their side riled up. I don't think it was taking him out of context. Do you? I mean, the semantics of it are right there.
We can play it again if people want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, Cindy Sheehan is just Bill Burkett. Her story is nothing more than forged documents. There's nothing about it that's real.
I think it's pretty clear.
The mainstream media is glomming onto it. It's not real. It's nothing more than an attempt. It's the latest effort made by the coordinated left.
It's awful that he would go on to slander her like that and kind of discredit her, all her grief and the fact that she lost her son in Iraq. But on a broader sense, the Republicans are really starting to freak out. The false reality that they have been plowing into the heads of the frightened and angry sheep of this country is starting to break apart. Even the GOP is starting to see a convergence of events, Riley.
Yeah, they're starting to see a convergence of events. And Cindy Sheehan's work has led to something in Congress. And we're going to talk about that later with Russ Feingold, a senator from Wisconsin, now saying there ought to be a written timetable for a pullout from Iraq. Cindy Sheehan helped do that.
Yeah, we can talk about it right now, Riley. I mean, apparently that, you know, a lot of people, there is a resolution that has been presented that is scheduling some sort of pullout. But Feingold is the first Democratic senator to say, get him out, set a deadline, let's pull him out now, you know, or at least by October of 2006.
By October of 2006. And the other thing that Russ Feingold has said is that his colleagues in the Democratic Party and in the halls of Congress are too timid in criticizing Bush over his Iraq war policy.
He's saying
that some other Democrats need to get a little backbone here.
Well, somebody's got to speak up. But, I mean, they're just so many of them supported the war to begin with. And I guess I can't explain why Democrats are behaving like they're behaving, aside from the fact that they're kind of wussies sometimes. But the thing that's interesting to me is that there are Republican speculators that are saying that eventually there will be an anti-war Republican candidate, which will be just heinous. So they'll just try and co-opt that point of view.
Yeah. Well, you know, there is the possibility that you will get a conservative anti-war candidate out of this. But next year, the stakes are so high. For example, in Pennsylvania, Rick Santorum is scared to death that he's going to lose that seat. I mean, scared.
God, how great would it be to watch him lose?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be exciting?
It would be extremely exciting.
That's one of the only reasons I tune into the Oscars if Tom Cruise is nominated for something, is just to watch him lose. There's certain people in the world, I don't know if it's Schadenfreude or what, but Rick Santorum, with his arrogance and his strange, religious beliefs, it would just be such a pleasure to see if he shows any sign. I'd like to see him cry, actually. Is that wrong of me to want to see Rick Santorum cry?
I don't know if he'll give you the satisfaction when he loses, but
yeah.
Maybe.
But there's a lot of elements that are adding to the GOP's panic, to the Republican panic, and I am just thrilled by it, because I sensed that even in that statement by Rush Limbaugh yesterday, that there wasn't the confidence, that there wasn't the sort of that kind of bloviating arrogance that he usually has, that he knew he was stepping out there on the ice. And you can see it in a lot of ways. I mean, the missed deadline of the Constitution in Iraq is starting to make them uncomfortable. And as you said, in 2006, if this war is still on the front page, which it will be, and we'll make sure it will be, because I'm sure we're still going to be there, the midterm elections could sway. I know some of these Republicans are saying they could never get back the House, but I think we could.
Well, you know, that kind of defeatist, well, you know, the Republicans are going to win anyway. I don't believe that. I've never believed that. And I think that the American people, if you start looking at the polling in terms of Bush's support in the context of this war, it's a slam dunk. Some Republicans are going to be losing some seats next year.
Okay, folks, we are broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down. We're going to be talking to Carl Redding, the owner of Amy Ruth's, and a former bodyguard for Al Sharpton. We've got the iNews coming up. We're going to, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to Waffles. It's 16 past the hour. Morning Sedition is Air America Radio.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
Feels good to be a gangster.
Hey, it's 19 past the hour. America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down, have some chicken and waffles. Chicken and waffles. We're not giving them away. We got some coffee coming, but they got an amazing breakfast menu here. I can't, like, all I'm thinking about now is waffles and bacon and
bacon.
Sausage. Yeah, and more bacon.
You want slab bacon or regular bacon?
They have slab bacon?
Hey, this is uptown.
Oh, man. All right, well, look, folks, sometimes it's when you read the headlines, it's kind of tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, we have the iNews Wi-Fi 5000 headline translator right here. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Brendan? That's the live intro. From Fox News, a spokesman, Iraq constitution within 2 days. Iraq constitution within 2 days. Translation, Iraqis change word for years to days. From USA Today, home prices extremely overvalued in 53 cities. Home prices extremely overvalued in 53 cities. Translation, new generation of homeless get reprieve. From Fox News, illness and injury tied to long work hours. Illness and injury tied to long work hours. Translation, President Bush at very low risk for illness and injury. All right, man. So, folks, a little later in the show, we'll be giving away autographed copies of new books by our two guests, Mick Foley's Scooter and Brett Easton Ellis's Lunar Park, courtesy of Alfred A. Knopf Publishing.
Uh-oh.
So you got to be here to win. So if that means anything to you, if you're in your car and you just really want to win a Brett Easton Ellis book, come on down. If that's not enough to bring you here, chicken and waffles. All right.
Yeah.
The Billionaires for Bush will be holding their Drunk on Power Ball this Wednesday, August 24th, aboard the Lightship Frying Pan off West 23rd Street at Chelsea Piers with DJs and live bands. A portion of the proceeds will go to the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. For info, go to billionairesforbush.com. And here's a hint, they're not real billionaires. They just dress up funny.
Yeah, they do.
They were here last time.
I hope the frying pan is seaworthy. That's
yeah, it does it actually get...
I'm only kidding.
Why the hell would you call a plane a frying pan? Or a boat?
A boat
yeah,
a frying pan?
Yeah.
I don't know. It looks... It's got a long and storied history.
Oh, dude, I think I'm freaking out a little bit. I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you're leaving
Monday.
Me here alone, pal.
Yeah, it's going to be great. You know, you're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
I'm going to be going to Hawaii, and my wife and I have decided that this is, I think just thinking about this, Riley, is going to make you a little nervous. I'm getting on a helicopter. I'm going to fly.
Well, that does make me.
We're taking a helicopter trip, but it's not just a regular helicopter. It's one of those helicopters with no doors.
No doors?
And you got to pay extra for that. You've got to pay extra
the doorless helicopter?
Yeah, for the feeling that you really might die. So let's talk about these Bush polls again, because I think it's important. His approval polls have dropped to 41% nationwide, which is beautiful. It's such an amazing thing. This is it's all 50 states. There's separate polls.
Mm-hmm.
And his lowest approval rating is in Rhode Island at 29%, and his highest is in Idaho at 59%. Bush is only above 50% in 70 states. He's at 50% in 70 states, 7 states, and he's below 50 in 41 states. And I think this is an amazing indication of just, you know, what the country is starting to feel. As I said before, the reality that they're creating for people, the propaganda machine that is the Republican talking points machine that is the media, is starting to fall apart.
Well, it is, and if you look at these numbers, one of the things that stands out is that there are 5 states here where the gap in his approval rating between those who approve and those who disapprove is 30% or higher. That's an amazing statistic. In other words, you know, because if somebody beats somebody in an election by 30%, they got creamed. And in this case, the states of Vermont, California, Delaware, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island all have a gap between approval and disapproval of over 30%. Disapproving of George W. Bush.
And that's, you know, what's amazing about all this is that the place that approves of him the most is Idaho. Now, oddly, that's ironic because Idaho, of course, the home of the American Nazi movement and many other sort of white supremacist activities and strange marginal weirdos, that he would go find love there. But the interesting is that now that he's got a protest right outside of his ranch, there are people dying every day in Iraq, and he's got a 59% approval rating in Idaho. So, of course, next week, President Bush is going to visit Idaho.
Yeah.
Looking for a little love. In the first presidential visit since Bill Clinton went to McCall during 2000, George Bush is running to the only state that still loves him next week.
Well, yeah. And this is entirely how he deals with the reality of Iraq. And it is an ugly, ugly reality. That's why Cindy Sheehan and many other people have been camped out in front of his ranch, because more and more people are saying, wait a minute. There's all of this going on. Iraq seems to be descending into civil war, and you're out biking somewhere? You're out flying helicopters somewhere? You're out going to your favorite people to, you know, to find love?
It's just amazing to me that he seems to be one of the only ones that's actually committed to this non-reality that he's created for himself. That his first response, what an aristocratic ass. He's like a robber baron. He's like a guy that cares nothing about the current of concern in the country, to the point where, what does he think, we're stupid? He think that we're not going to notice? He's just going to fly to this other place and pander to people that like him?
Well, yeah, and he's always, throughout his 5 years, pandered to people who like him. He very rarely even speaks. And by the way, now he did speak to Putin, right?
Yeah.
The president of Russia called him his boy.
Yeah.
His boy, like Russ Feingold, has called for a written timetable for a pullout out of Iraq.
Mm.
That's his boy's doing that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess calling Putin his boy is better than calling him his bitch, I think.
You know, yeah. Because I was trying to be nice about it.
that would definitely cause problems, I think, in the long run. But I've always found him contemptible, but I just don't. The only implication is obviously this president can't run again. But the only thing that can really happen that's really positive is that enough people will turn on the Republicans for the midterm elections.
Well, you know, there was always a feeling after the November elections, I think, that the Republicans would try to overreach during this second Bush term. Now, in terms of legislation, you might not say that, but in terms of the way they have mishandled Iraq, it's a no-brainer. They don't have a plan, whether it be for an exit strategy or for continuing to occupy the country. Don't think for a minute that these people know what they're going to do if they decide to stay in Iraq. If they decide to do what Bush is talking about, they don't know how to do it. If they knew how to do it, it would have been half done by now. We've been there long enough.
We are broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant here in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come down. It's Morning Tradition here on Air America Radio.
This is the best of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
The hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're coming to you live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down. We got coffee. There's chicken and waffles. There's pork and waffles. There's beef and waffles.
They're bringing it upstairs, too.
Bacon
now.
And waffles.
You're
there's
done.
Biscuits. I know I'm not going to be able to deal with it. Hey, unbelievable. A special guest just dropped in into our Harlem studio here. Wayne Gilman is here. Wayne Gilman,
good
what's
morning.
Going on?
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Uh-huh.
It's always a great pleasure and honor to me to facilitate some sort of weird dozens playing between you two that goes on.
It's what's a little it? Too early for that.
Yeah, it's a little too early.
And besides,
and we're about nine blocks south of where
we started, actually.
Yeah,
you know?
Where we started.
All right.
We started in this business on Lenox Avenue and 125th Street.
310 Lenox Avenue.
310.
And that was the original BLS?
LIBFM.
Okay.
Or it was BLS.
And now what was a standard broadcasting day like for you guys back then? I mean, how'd you get started?
Whenever until whenever.
Mr. Riley used to smoke like a chimney back in the day.
Yeah, I did.
Counselor's white here now.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
And the thing is...
But you could smoke on the air then, right?
Well, yeah, back then.
You could smoke anywhere.
The equipment, but you could smoke on the air.
Right.
Go figure.
Yeah. No. But it's weird when you really think about how much smoking went on in places that, you know, if a person lit a cigarette in the back corner of this place, everybody would be like, oh, my God, I can't do it. But everyone smoked everywhere then. On airplanes. Could you imagine when they smoked on airplanes? I remember smoking on airplanes. Yeah. Didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. I mean, you do this all the time. No, but the thing is, no, I mean, it was a very enriching experience. It was like a school for all of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was.
Back then, it was a roach-infested, rat-infested building.
Uh-huh.
And we used to do newscasts and broadcast, actually back in the day, WLIB, the flagship of Air America, was an R&B station.
Yeah. Okay, and that's where you make your chops, right?
That's where I started. My first assignment was covering a demonstration in front of the Apollo Theater. In the summer of 1973.
What was that about?
Some guy was upset. You know who it was? Remember Rabbi Judah Anderson?
Yeah.
He passed away some years ago. He was upset with James Brown about something. James Brown, in those days, they used to still have people stretched around the block waiting to see him come to the Apollo. And he was coming to the Apollo that weekend, and Rabbi Judah Anderson had about five people in front of the Apollo protesting his appearance.
Five people.
That was a powerful protest.
It was a powerful protest. Yeah. We ended up not using it, but hey, I learned a little that first day.
Five Jewish guys in front of the Apollo screaming?
No. That was a black guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, he was Rabbi Judah Anderson, but he was African American.
But what kind of rabbi was he then? I mean, was
we the... never figured that part out.
So, Wayne, you want to tell a story about the woman?
No. I can't, to tell you, to be honest with you, listening off the air, you would think that there, and I'm not saying this is a huge crowd at this hour, it counts because they're all white. But
Wait a minute, they're not all white. Come on up here.
I apologize. I couldn't help it. You know, we're never on time. But the fact of the matter is that you figure that you think you're in the Apollo just listening off in the car, the car radio.
So
you get down here, and I'm amazed to see so many people.
Oh, okay, you're not shattering the illusion.
No, I don't want to.
I didn't know where that was going. I was going to be like, you would think this show is popular in the car.
I'm not fully awake yet.
What time do you have to be to work?
Rachel's going to hold things down.
She's going to hold things
down. Is that right, Rachel?
Are you getting some salmon cakes and scrambled eggs?
No, Carl Redding, where is he? How come he's not
here?
He's
operating on CP time.
I rest my case.
You guys can
for
say
those
that.
Of you who know CP time.
Go ahead, explain it.
No, you said it. Explain it, Riley. What's CP time?
CP time?
Yes, say it. You want to get ethnic? Say it.
This is exactly what I was hoping for.
Color people time. That's
all
what
right.
it is.
Yeah.
All right, let's be down front about it.
All right, yeah.
You know, it's a
Harlem
little later
changed.
Than everybody. Yeah, it's certainly
Harlem has.
Harlem
changed since we were here last broadcasting together.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Or the last time you were
driving
across our 25th Street. All right.
Does that mean that...
Since I'm forced to tell this story.
Oh, go ahead, tell the story. Yeah. This is a story, folks.
I thought you were going to say that Harlem has changed. It's now AA time. I thought that was
right. That's right.
That went over my head.
African American.
Oh, I see. Okay. At least he's politically correct.
Well, that would be the joke, Wayne. But that's
all right.
There's no reason for you to
Am
be.
Am I wasting time?
No, you're not.
No,
I came here for the food anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead. Tell the story. I know you're going to do it.
Way back in the day, 30 years ago. Thank you, Gerald. I used to push a cab while trying to make ends meet going to school. And one of my last, in fact, my last fare, regrettably, was a lady I picked up in what is now known as Spanish Harlem.
Uh-huh.
And I brought her, I was to take her to 8th Avenue and 125th Street, a block away from the Apollo Theater. She had bags of groceries with her. And just to give you a thumbnail sketch of what it was like driving a cab back then, this is at a time when they were just installing partitions between the front and back seats. Because there was a huge amount of robberies going on. No different than it is today, but people were being killed and stabbed and all sorts of stuff, pushing cabs. Why I did it, I don't know, just the thrill of just driving in Manhattan. But nonetheless, I picked up this lady at 96th Street and I believe 2nd Avenue. I'm taking her to 8th and 125th Street. Somehow, I hear her giving me change in a little device that used to pass the money through.
A little tray.
It wasn't even a tray. It was just like a little pass thing. I didn't even know how to describe it. But nonetheless, I'm getting this money, and I'm thinking she's about to leave the cab. I turn around. I thanked her. I noticed the door open, and, you know, the light changed. I took off. I didn't know that she was still in the cab. And I tell you, because, I mean, the petitions were hermetically sealed. Mm-hmm. You couldn't hear what was going on in the back.
He couldn't hear her screams.
I really couldn't, you know?
Yeah.
Until I got to the
dispatch. And she was dragged across town.
Yeah, it's a true story. I dragged her from the corner of 7th Lenox Avenue and 125th Street to in front of the Apollo Theater when the police stopped me.
Her cane.
Yeah.
But she was okay?
I don't know. She's probably dead at this point. that was 30 years ago.
Well, no, but I was hoping for the happy ending.
The happy ending was I got fired that day. It was the first job I had ever been fired from.
Can we set the scene over more, Wayne? Now, Wayne, you had a big beard and a big afro.
Yeah, right. I looked a little bit like the old Fidel Castro back then, you know? Yeah. Somewhat nondescript. And you had to play the role, especially to go into certain neighborhoods.
Yeah.
What certain neighborhoods, my good
well,
man?
I mean, we won't go.
Let's get ethnic.
All right.
What neighborhoods?
Yes,
are you
but doing? I mean, to go through Harlem back then, you had to fit a certain description so you wouldn't be stopped.
You had to look militant. That's
yeah, right. I guess so. That's appropriate.
Yeah.
Right.
But you did look
and
militant.
And I did.
Back
I played
then.
The part. You know, I was never stopped.
No, you were.
You know,
militant
people
back
thought
then.
I was, and I'm still militant.
Did you have the little?
When they got out of the cab, he would say, "All power to the people."
Exactly.
To whoever it was.
And that was the phrase of the day back then. You know.
Did you have a little pick with the fist sticking out of
no,
your
no,
hair?
No. That was
he
more
kept
Riley.
It in his back pocket.
Riley, yeah.
I had an Afro pick.
Yeah, the hair.
He had an
all
Afro
black
pick.
Men had Afro
he
picks
had an Apple
with
Jack.
With the fist on it.
Huh?
With the fist on
of
it?
Of course.
Yeah.
Wazoo right. Wazuri used Afro Sheen.
We're time traveling here in Harlem.
Yes, so I see. You know,
going back to the days of yesteryear.
Three quarters of our audience has now turned us off.
Now, the big question is, do you change to go to the real job now? Or are you going to work with this shirt on?
It's casual Friday, man.
Oh, it's casual Friday.
He's going to flex for the
even at the other company I work for, this is considered acceptable. Right?
Yeah, no.
Right? You asking me?
Oh, you worked there 30 years.
Yeah,
you should
know.
All right.
I didn't ever went bare armed like
well,
that.
Well, you know.
Oh, here we go.
You
have to realize this marriage has been on, what, 30 years?
Well, it's been going on. I mean, I was just trying to remember which marriage because I just recently left one.
No, I was talking about you.
Was that a marriage?
Folks, we are broadcasting live. Wayne, thank you for coming. Stay here. We're going to have breakfast. I'm just, you know. We're going to do the dog of the week in a few minutes.
Yeah,
are you ready for that? You feeling
up.
Good
yeah,
about
I'm
that? We're going to talk to the owner of the place, Carl Redding. We're broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. You want to come down? There's waffles and chicken and coffee and giveaways. And Freddie Sinelis, Mick Foley, and Mike V. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Yeah.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley there. We're broadcasting live from Amy Ruth's restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down. Chicken and waffles. Got comedian Mike B coming up. We're going to be talking to the owner of the joint, Carl Redding, in just a few minutes. And we got Wayne Gelman here who's on his way to work. Wayne, it was great seeing you.
Same here.
Yeah.
As it is seeing you every day.
Well, that's very nice of you because I know you're seething with resentment towards me and really don't like me.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, you guys have a thing. You got it worked out. But you're going to run down there now?
Right, I am.
Okay.
I don't want Rachel to panic at all.
Well, hang out for 1 second. You can hear Mark Riley do his.
Ooh.
It's time for the dog of the week.
Yeah. All right.
Mark, what is it about August that brings out the dog in humankind?
Mm.
This past week, we had plenty of hopefuls, including the emperor of talk blowhards, Rush Limbaugh. He dogged out Cindy Sheehan, then backtracked and said he didn't say what he said. Then there's Comcast Cable of Chicago, who recently sent a bill to a complaining customer addressed to, and this is a true story, bitch dog.
You gotta tell that story later.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But for this week's canine conqueror, we need go no further than the Jersey Shore. Specifically a restaurant called Park Hills Waterfront Grill in Allenhurst, New Jersey. Brooklyn resident Elliot Stein was finishing dinner with his girlfriend, and the check came to the table. On it, the pair was identified as the Jew couple. When questioned, the restaurant manager simply told Stein the term wasn't derogatory. Stein then says he was asked to leave for making a fuss. To make matters worse, 2 weeks later, he got the credit card statement, and the phrase was on it also. The New York Post contacted Park Hill's general manager, who said they used the term, get this, as a form of identity.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, identity. Who knows what happens when blacks or Latinos patronize this godforsaken place? For insensitivity below and beyond the call of duty, the Park Hill Waterfront Grill is this week's Dog of the Week.
That story that you told, that's a true story.
Yeah, it's a true story. I didn't make this up. I couldn't make this up.
Well, but the story about the woman who, apparently this woman calls up her cable company and gets, you know, bounced around like 12 times, you know, trying to get a complaint through.
Yeah.
They actually put her on the phone with someone who speaks Spanish, which she doesn't even speak, you know, just to piss her off more. And then she gets their cable bill and it says bitch dog on it.
Yeah.
But it's not as funny because there's a related case, and this is real as well. This guy, this people's an energy customer, Jeffrey Barnes, started getting letters addressed to Jeffrey Scrotum Bag Barnes.
Yeah. Another true story.
But you know what? You know, people are like, and you get these people at these companies going, why is this happening? Who are these people that are doing this? Look, if you've ever worked at a restaurant,
yes,
or you've ever been anywhere where you do customer service and you have the opportunity to get back at the customer secretly, you will do so.
Is that what Wayne Gilman was doing with his cab?
Well, no, I don't think that's it. But, you know, all those horrible stories. All I'm saying is be nice to your waiters because you are eating the food off the plate.
Yes, you are. And tip them well.
Yeah, because you don't know what's going on sometimes. If you're mean to your waiter, they've got a lot of power over sitting in the back room just watching you eat their snot or something.
Yeah.
But, hey, look, you know what I'm talking about. If you worked in a restaurant, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? All of you understand what I'm saying. The Jew thing is pretty funny. I used to do about 20 minutes in my act about being a Jew. And I was in Texas once, and I had done about 20 minutes about being a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy comes up to me after the show and goes, you're pretty funny, man, but you're not really a Jew, are you? Yeah, I thought it'd be great to make up 20 minutes of Jewish identifying material to do in Texas because I'm not a Jew.
Was it Crawford, Texas?
No, it wasn't Crawford. They don't have a comedy club there.
I thought it was the Bush Ranch.
There's a lot of comedy there, but there's not a comedy club. By the way, thanks for bringing that up, Riley, because if you don't know out there, if you're listening, Cindy Crawford had to...
Cindy Sheehan.
I keep doing that. Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Crawford is fine. She's comfortable. She's got a birthmark on her face, and she has nothing to do with what I'm about to say. Cindy Sheehan, on the other hand, has had to leave Crawford, the Camp Casey, because her mother has suffered a stroke. She's gone to L.A. to be in the hospital with her mother. The struggle continues, though. The people who are still out at Crawford, a lot of families of veterans and families of people who lost people in Iraq are still out there keeping the protests going. We don't know whether Cindy is going to return to Crawford, but she did issue this statement. Quote, this afternoon around 4 p.m. Crawford time, my sister Dee Dee received a call that our mother has had a stroke and is in the emergency room at a hospital in Los Angeles. As you can imagine, this is a devastating blow for my sister, my brother, my children, and myself. I'm leaving Crawford temporarily to be with my mother. While I'm gone, the other mothers of fallen soldiers in Iraq, along with the Iraq War veterans and other soldiers, will remain at Camp Casey and keep up the pressure on the president to meet with us and answer questions about the war, end quote. So the struggle continues. It's important because it's starting to work. People are, the awareness of a new sort of reinvigorated peace movement, because that is one of the principles. It's certainly one of the progressive principles and one of the liberal principles that has been at the core of this agenda since, you know, as long as far back as certainly my life.
Oh, yeah. So you know that this is working when the opposition goes to such great lengths to smear an innocent woman who's gone to find out answers and find justice for the loss of her son. And you see person, whether it's Limbaugh or O'Reilly or any of the rest of these people, impugning her motives, questioning her patriotism, because O'Reilly called her a traitor. And what's happening now is that as these people are running this, and they see the reaction from the American people, they're starting to back off, just like Limbaugh did. And it's absolutely disgusting to hear people refer to a patriot. Because as far as I'm concerned, Cindy Sheehan is a patriot.
So Riley,
yeah.
Tell me about these polls. Apparently, your buddy Fernando Ferrer got 33% of a vote in a recent poll of likely Democratic voters, and that is not enough to not have a runoff.
Yeah, that is the latest Quinnipiac poll. Remember, we talked to Mickey Carroll from Quinnipiac a couple weeks back. This is the latest poll. This is among likely voters. And see, this is when they start during the month of August separating the wheat from the chaff. These are not just all voters. These are people who are likely to go to the polls. And what's happened is that the race has tightened up. Fernando Ferrer has 33%. C. Virginia Fields, who was second at 20%, is now tied with Gifford Miller at 17%. And Anthony Weiner, who got off after passing a kidney stone and still showed up for a debate Tuesday, is at 16%.
See, that guy should get at least 18% just for showing up after passing a kidney stone. He should have said that. Did he say it when he was debating when you were there? Did he say, hey, folks, look, I'm just thankful to be here. I almost died an hour ago. That guy's got to learn how to campaign a little bit.
He still got some of the best lines of the night. A lot of pundits thought he won. But now we're starting to see this thing congeal because people are starting to pay attention. And from Labor Day until the 13th, and I hope everybody here in our audience at Amy Roos is registered and is prepared to go out and exercise your franchise.
Wow, I'm pretty sure I am. I'm pretty sure I'm registered. You know what the scary thing about that poll is? 51% said they might change their minds, and 44% said that they would vote for Mike Bloomberg if they didn't agree with who that the Democrat that was running.
Yeah, that's the confounding thing about New York in 2005. This is a city that went 82% for John Kerry, and it looks like we're going to reelect a Republican mayor. It's the most confounding thing in the world.
Well, I think he got the names of those 51% of those Democratic voters and sending them a check for $100 each just to vote for him.
Well, you know, there's an inevitability factor with Mike Bloomberg right now in New York. People run around and they say, you know, I don't like the guy, but he's going to win anyway. And, you know,
that's such a weird defeatist kind of thing.
Of course it is.
People were saying that about Kerry, too. And people were saying about Bush clearly, you know, people can make the difference. But if you get that in your head, just because of the momentum that these guys pay for, you know, they pay for that momentum. They pay to make your mind do that.
Well,
literally.
Yeah. And I mean, Mike Bloomberg has spent an enormous amount of money, more than all the Democrats combined up until now. He's going to spend even more. I think he's ready to spend up to $100 million to win reelection.
Because even in my head, it's weird because when somebody spends that much money and he has that much power and he can stay in your mind by using that money in an effective way, you have that moment where it's like, well, Mike Bloomberg's all right, isn't he? For what? Oh, because he's rich? And that's all the thing it really means. They buy that part of your brain. It's very scary to me.
Well, yeah, and there's going to be all of you in the audience that live in the city of New York, you're going to start getting direct mail from Mike Bloomberg very, very shortly. So
direct mail
prepared.
And checks. Yeah. We're broadcasting live from Amy Roos Restaurant in Harlem on 116th Street between 7th and Lenox. Come on down, chicken and waffles time. It's 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. Wake up, sheeple. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens. We're broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. The proprietor, Mike O'Neill's, put out some bagels and lox. We got free coffee and tea. We got muffins and everything else going on here on the table. We're going to be giving away Lennon tickets to anyone here in the audience. Lennon is a new musical opening up on Broadway. It's based on Lennon's music, you know, like the Billy Joel music one. People dance and they sing like John Lennon. Very exciting. and we're going to, you know, it is a good show.
Are you making fun of your prize?
It's not your
Mark?
Turn yet.
I'm sorry. All right.
That's Mike Birbiglia. He's going to be funny in just a second, but no pressure. Anyways. We are also giving away Film Movement DVD of the Month Club subscriptions. That sends you a new independent foreign film each month. Also, we're going to be giving away tickets to see Mike and I at Gotham Comedy Club tonight. We're going to be giving away a big book about pizza because later in the show we're going to have food critic Ed Levine on to talk about pizza. All very exciting, huh, Riley?
I love pizza.
Look at these people are riveted. They're riveted. How are you? It's the guy with the orange juice. You're doing a great job this morning. I'm telling you, folks, we got...
Actually, he is doing a great job this morning.
I'm telling you, he is. People are still coming in. I'm telling the bagels and lox thing is really working. It's drawing people to the place.
Don't eat all of it, all right?
It's a great space, man. It's definitely the best.
It's a beautiful
Even Gerald over here, our board op, was like, wow, I got room. This is perfect. This is perfect. I can sit down and relax. So let's talk a little bit about Cindy Sheehan. Then before we talk to Mike Birbiglia over there, this is day 7 out at the ranch for Cindy. Let's give her a hand.
Yeah.
Earlier in the show, we had our friend George McNamara, who came up from Veterans for Peace. He had Veterans for Peace, part of that operation, is out there with Cindy, along with several other groups. We've got Military Families Speak Out and Iraq Veterans Against the War, Code Pink, the Crawford Peace House. Everybody's out there, and they're still holding their waiting. They're doing their vigil, waiting for Bush to address her demands that he explain this war and give a reason to her why her son had to die for a lie.
Well, yeah, and Bush, it was interesting, in speaking to Cindy Sheehan's concerns, did not speak to exactly what his rationale was for sending the troops over in the first place. His thing was then to take her concerns and make them about pulling the troops out, as opposed to addressing her central question, which is, why did her son die?
Right.
And at some point, George W. Bush and all of these neocons in his administration are going to have to answer for why 1,800, 1,900, 2,000, 2,200 people ended up being killed in Iraq for a war that no one wanted in the first place.
And also, this whole right-wing attack on Cindy Sheehan is despicable because these guys can't even appreciate that she is an individual person that has been through a tremendous amount of grief, that is real anger, real passion, real feelings, and justified feelings, but they just treat her as fodder. You know, the fact that the Drudge Report published a letter on the Drudge Report from her family. The letter was basically saying, we're not on board with Cindy, and it was signed Casey Sheehan's grandparents, aunts, uncles, and numerous cousins. A little vague, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And the fact is, I read this earlier. I think we should read it again. This is from Cindy Sheehan's diary on the Daily Cause. Still putting out the O'Reilly fires of me being a traitor and using Casey's name dishonorably. My in-laws sent out a press conference disagreeing with me in strong terms, which is totally okay with me because they barely knew Casey. We have always been on separate sides of the fence politically, and I have not spoken to them since the elections when they supported the man who was responsible for Casey's death. The thing that matters to me is that my family, Casey's dad, and my other 3 kids are on the same side of the fence that I am. Since Congress is not holding George Bush accountable and the media is not doing their jobs and holding George Bush accountable, we, the American people, need to hold him accountable for lying to us to get us into a disastrous war. November 2nd, 2004 was not his accountability moment. Today is. We are finished allowing him to get away with deceiving the American public and abusing his power. We are going to talk to Cindy Sheehan in just a little while. Oil prices went up again. That means gas is going to be more expensive.
$70 a barrel, folks. That translates...
Crazy!
That translates into $50 to fill your tank.
$50.
$50. And what's going to happen...
Isn't that nuts?
What people are doing now is not filling their tanks when they go to the gas station. Give me $10. There was a time you could say to somebody, give me $10, and you'd actually get, three-quarters of a tank of gas. Now you say, give me $10, you're lucky if you get 2 gallons.
Who would have known that you could hear environmentalists, not even people who are environmentalists on purpose starting their days like, screw that, I'm walking.
Yeah, give me a Prius, quick.
This is like the big neocon, secret, weird, around the sort of side way of getting people not to, burn oil in their cars.
Yeah, well, the other thing is, these SUV drivers, I hope there are none in our audience, but SUVs really are the bane of my life. And it's not the machines themselves. In many cases, it's the drivers who are so arrogant as to think they own the road.
Can't stay in their lane. They don't think they own it. They don't know how to drive it.
Yeah, and half of it's because they can't drive it. Well, now they're going to be. If everybody else is paying $50 to fill their tanks, they're going to be paying $100 to fill their tanks. And I hope it means that they take those monsters the hell off the road.
Yeah, they're unsafe. That's right. And you always have that weird fear where they're just going to roll over on top of you. All right, our guest here performs at comedy clubs all over the country. You've seen him on Comedy Central and David Letterman. He's putting together, you're going to do a college tour with Comedy Central this year?
Yeah, well,
aren't
winter.
You the special guy?
Oh, thanks.
Please welcome Mike Birbiglia.
Wow, I've never had I've never had such an insulting intro before from a fellow comic.
Well, you know, I just resent your youth, Mike. That's all.
I understand.
Resent the fact that you're coming up and I'm going out. You understand?
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I always get nervous, just to give you a little backstory, I always get nervous about Mark because he's one of my comedy heroes, so I always get a little shaky around.
Oh, you know what? I take back what I said earlier. You're one of my favorite up-and-coming comics.
I can't stop eyeing the pizza books. How many extra pizza books do you
have? Let's see how you do.
Yeah. I love pizza. I do. I would marry pizza, but it would just be an elaborate ploy to eat her whole family at the reception.
Ooh. Well, you're Italian, aren't you? What kind of name is Birbiglia?
Well, it's Italian. Mm-hmm. We're not real Italian. We're like Olive Garden Italian. Sometimes people come up to me, they'll be like, in Italy, it's pronounced Birbiglia. I'm like, in America, you're annoying. But, you know, it was tough growing up. Kids would give me nicknames like Birbiglebug and Birbibliography and Faggot. All kinds of stuff. I don't know. Some more clever than others, but pizza's a great metaphor for America. You know, it started in Italy, and then it came over here, and then we made it better than the original, and then we invaded Iraq under false pretenses. It's really a lot like... I didn't mean to get political there for a second, but...
You're in the right place.
It was really about pizza. But I can't eat too much pizza because I'm trying to stay fit right now. I'm on a little diet. I got a card in the subway that says... Lose 10 to 400 pounds. I'm pretty sure I don't want to lose the whole 400 because then I'd weigh negative 235, and that seems like a dangerous weight. But I make deals with myself. I'm like, I can eat this cheeseburger, but then later I'm going to the gym. But then instead of going to the gym, I eat a cake. I'm like, the deal is off. My other weakness with other than pizza is sugar cereal. Like, if I buy a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch at 3 in the afternoon, that box ain't making it to 10 a.m. Because it's like crack, you know? You don't buy crack for some point in the future. You buy it when you want it, and then you fall asleep in the tub. Or whatever you do with crack. I don't know.
You're not planning ahead when you buy crack.
Yeah, exactly.
Crack is no right now kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I live downtown. I got a place in Greenwich Village, just a little bigger than my body. And I saw a mouse in my place the other day. I have a really small place. I leaned over. I was like, where are you going to sleep? But I got a great building. We got our own drug dealer. So every time I walk out my door, same guy tries to sell me drugs. I'm walking out in the morning to get a Snapple. This guy's like, you want weed? I'm like, do you have any Snapple? Because I think he should also sell Snapple. That way he hooks you in with the Snapple. And then he's like, you know what would go great with that Snapple? Crack. It'd be like Amazon.com. If you like Snapple, you'll also like
Mike Birbiglia, ladies and gentlemen. He's going to stay with us. Now you're going to hang out and maybe sit down and tell us about Montreal and what you've been doing. It's 15, almost 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, live from O'Neill's on 64th Street.
This is the best of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
Is broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. I am Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We got bagels and lox. Mike O'Neill put out a nice spread. Every table's got a white tablecloth. And some people have never sat at tables this nice.
That's true.
I'm talking to you, Rich. Rich, two bagels and orange juice over here. That was an hour ago. How many have you had, Rich? Be honest. How many bagels have you had? Someone is pointing four. Yeah, all right. Over here, we've got Lawton Smalls coming up in just a few minutes, folks.
Yeah.
For you Lawton Smalls fans. Directly stage right of me is Mike Birbiglia, the comedian. You might have seen him on Comedy Central, his half-hour special there, and on the David Letterman show, and he's going to be working with me tonight.
That's right. It's going to be a great time. And I can't help but notice this guy. Is his name Rich?
Yeah, it's Rich. Rich Two Bagels.
Is that a Wu-Tang Clan shirt?
Yeah, man.
I just can't.
He's from Shaolin, man.
I can't get over the fact I've never seen someone so malfitted for a Wu-Tang shirt. Thematically, you know.
Hey, I got a question for Mike.
Malfitting.
Yeah. Malfitting, right? Because, you know, Mike has a journal that he writes.
That's right.
Journal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And you spoke in your journal a while back to something that I think every black person in this room and every black person that's listening to us has experienced. And that is the you look just like syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
You walk up
I
to
wrote
a black
about that.
Oh, yeah. You look just like whoever it is.
Yeah, I had this all. It's the worst possible scenario. I was talking about this. I write a journal. It's called My Secret. If anyone wants to know, it's on Birbigs.com. It's My Secret Public Journal.
Birbigs.com. That's
Birbigs.com. Yeah. And I write a secret public journal. It's just a travelogue. I had an awkward incident where I was with my brother, and I introduced him to a friend of mine who's black. We're at a bar, and my brother, the first thing he says to the guy is, has anyone ever told you you look like Isaiah Thomas? I was like, oh, no. You know, it's one of those situations you don't want to be there, because you can't. There should hereby be a ban on all white people telling black people they've met for the first time the other black person they happen to may or may not look like. Because best case scenario, the person says yes, and there's an awkward moment of silence. And the worst case scenario, they say no, and there's an awkward moment of ambiguously racist silence, wherein Mike excuses himself to go to the bar to get a Long Island iced tea for himself, a coffee for his brother, and a glass of Courvoisier for the Isaiah Thomas-looking gentleman at the end of the bar.
It's good that you're both not secretly racist, so I appreciate that.
So
you were in Montreal for the big Montreal Comedy
Festival.
Yeah,
I did the Montreal Comedy
Festival.
What a
cluster bleep that is. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
my God. You see comics. The weird thing when you're a comic and you go to one of these festivals is if you've been doing this long enough, you know comics that no one else knows. And you literally go up there and you're like, oh, my God, you're still alive? I heard you were dead. Are you still funny?
I'm like terrible at drinking, and that's all it really is drinking, right? The whole festival is just these 4 a.m. bingers.
How does that play out? I mean, that can mean a lot of things to be terrible at drinking.
Well,
Be honest. You got a problem.
No. Here's how I put it. There's a lot of sports analogies with drinking, mm-hmm. like pregame and party foul. Mm-hmm. I have to make up my own. Like the other day, I was like, oh, I pulled a hamstring, and my friend was like, what does that mean? I was like, oh, I threw up on your couch, and then I did it again, and I was like, 30 love. But I can't drink too much. Because I become another person. Like last year when I was drinking, I met this girl and she gave me her number. Next day, I didn't even want to call her. I didn't feel like she met me. I felt like she met Two Drink Mike. Two Drink Mike loves dancing and knows a magic trick. Zero Drink Mike enjoys biographies and has serious opinions about wildlife. Five Drink Mike enjoys dancing with wildlife. And that's how I describe it. And I can't do any of that. I can't smoke pot either because I'm the least fun person to smoke pot with. No one wants to hang with the guy who ends every sentence with, do you guys hate me? That's what it always is. It's just very awkward. My whole life is just all constantly these awkward situations. And I have a habit of making awkward situations even more awkward. Like, I was moving a new bed into my apartment recently, and this woman who lived in the building opened the front door with her key for me. And she goes, I'm not worried because a rapist wouldn't have a bed like that. Now, what I should have said was nothing. What I did say was, you'd be surprised. And And there's nothing you can say after that.
You guys hate me. That's a good one.
It's awkward. You know, the other awkward topic these days is movies. You know that because it's like the new religion. Like I was talking to this girl and I was like, oh, I hated that movie. And then she was like, that movie's the reason I stopped cutting myself.
Oh.
And then I had to pull it back. I'm like, it was pretty good. I like the ending.
Thanks a lot, man. Mike Birbiglia. He'll be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight with me.
Thanks.
You can go to Birbigs.com to read the secret private journal of Mike Birbiglia. We're going to hook you up with a pizza book if you want to hang out and meet this guy.
Yeah,
we're going to be giving away a couple of pizza books. We got Lawton Smalls coming up momentarily. And we're going to be talking to, Cindy Sheehan a little later in the show, and food critic Ed Levine will be here. Will Chase, star of the new Broadway musical Lennon, is going to be here. We are broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street. Come on down. We're giving away tickets to Gotham Comedy Club. We're giving away Film Movement, DVD of the Month Club subscriptions. We're giving away pizza books. Boy, man.
We got a lot of stuff.
This is the nicest one. And by the way, if I didn't mention it already 18 times, Mike O'Neill, the guy who owns the place. Bagels and Locks on the bar. So stay with us. This morning's edition with Mark and Mark on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on the road. And don't forget, we'll be live at the New School Fishman Auditorium on 12th Street in Manhattan this Friday.
You're listening to the best of Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning. Wake up, people. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Mike O'Neill, the proprietor, has laid out some beautiful bagels and lox. We got coffee. We got white tablecloth set tables. We got muffins. We got orange juice. What a day it's been. It's beautiful, Riley. Nice to see you. I'm looking forward to the weekend. What are you doing this weekend, Mark?
I'm going up to Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. What happens up there? Drum Corps?
Drum Corps, man. It's the championships. It's the
Drum
World
Corps time.
Championships this weekend.
Before I introduce our guest, I wanted to say that the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene is requesting that restaurants try to cut out trans fats in their food prep. That's like margarine and some frying oils and possibly reworking some baking recipes because these fats clog the arteries and make people die.
Put down the muffins, people.
Yeah. Exactly. No, enjoy the muffins. Just, you know, realize be prudent about the muffins. The FDA is already demanding that all foods containing the nasty fats be labeled as such in January. Now, I'm going to ask our guests here. New York City, folks, is full of great hot dog joints and pizzerias, but without some guidance, you could end up with a bad meal, that's for sure, and there's nothing worse than bad pizza.
How disappointing
is that? All right, fortunately, the man to offer that guidance is right here beside me at O'Neill's Restaurant. He's a contributor to the New York Times. He's also the author of Pizza, A Slice of Heaven, The Ultimate Pizza Guide, and companion, Ed Levine. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Good to be here, Mark.
It's nice to see you, man. I'll tell you, honestly, when it comes to pizza, nothing can ruin your day because I'm not a huge pizza guy, so when I'm going to have pizza, it's like important, it's special, it's got to be great, and if it isn't, I literally feel hostility towards the pizza place.
You know, it's true because people have such personal feelings about pizza, and it's weird, and they take it personally. I was just telling someone when I was in Chicago recently, you know, I'm not a very popular man in Chicago.
Why is that?
Because I said in the book that at best Chicago pizza is a good casserole. Now, that completely threw them. The page two columnist in the Chicago Sun-Times devoted not one, but two columns to bashing me.
It's a whole different game in Chicago. So you're not a deep dish guy at all. You'll go with Sicilian, but the deep dish thing you think is a sham.
It is. It's a sham. It's not pizza.
Yeah.
You know, you can call it
pizza in New York.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
Well, you know, actually, and I don't mind Chicago pizza just from a pizza political perspective because it is in a blue state.
Yeah.
But But and actually, all of the pizza I like turns out to be in blue states, which I just thought of on the way over here. There's only one great pizzeria in a red state.
Where's that?
Arizona, Phoenix, Arizona. Maybe the best pizza in the world.
Come on, my brother's in Arizona, in Phoenix.
I'm telling
what
you,
what is it called?
Pizzeria Bianco.
Pizzeria Bianco in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona.
Chris Bianco, like he lives and dies with every pie.
I'm going today, man. How long will it take me to go?
You got a gig tonight, right?
Yeah.
It might be tough.
All right, maybe tomorrow I'll go.
What makes great pizza great pizza?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I set out in the book to say that. To me, a good pizza starts with a great crust, right?
Yes.
Because pizza is, after all, bread.
Yes.
Right? So it's got to have a nice, thin outer layer, the crust, that's crisp.
Yeah.
And then it has to give way to sort of soft and tender bread dough.
Right.
Okay.
And
but
isn't
this one of those things that's relative to your taste?
Yeah. I mean, look, but you got to tell people.
What to like?
What to like? That's my job.
So, exactly. So if somebody says, this is good, you could say, no, you're wrong.
Right.
You're clearly wrong.
Exactly.
This is not objective.
This is not subjective.
Yeah, right. You're an idiot.
That's what we try to do. That's what food writers try to do.
Uh-huh.
That's the subject.
So it's hard on the outside, then it gives way, but it's just softness.
Soft, yeah, I don't want any. When it comes to, I want to be able to. I want it to be able to bend and not break.
Right.
Okay. So when I fold it over, that's what I want to happen. I don't want too thin. I don't want cracker thin.
Yeah, me neither. Because you feel ripped off. You're like, what is this?
Is this saltines?
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
You know, we don't need saltines on pizza.
No.
And I like the tomato sauce. I don't want any sugar in my tomato sauce.
Okay.
Now a lot of people like sugar because it artificially sweetens the tomato.
I didn't know that. See, this is one of those things where this is all new to me.
Oh, no, you can taste the difference with pizza that's been, and for some reason in this area, it seems like that kind of tomato sauce is on the thin crust pizzas.
Absolutely.
At least the ones that
I've had. Yeah, yeah.
So it's more like a pastry.
Yeah.
Almost,
It's weird. It's dessert. Yeah. It's a dessert pizza.
But I didn't know they put sugar in sushi rice. I'm an idiot.
You
knew that, right?
That's all right. Yeah, I know a few things that you don't know, but not many.
Come on. All right, so now we got the, you don't like the sweet tomato sauce. We got thin, the crust gives, and then what about cheese?
Okay, the key is cheese.
Yeah.
I don't want yellow mozzarella.
Who the hell uses yellow mozzarella?
They all use yellow mozzarella because it's cheap. It's aged.
Yeah.
Fresh mozzarella is white.
Yes.
Okay. Aged mozzarella is yellow. So most of the slices are
yellowish.
Yellowish.
Okay.
Ooh, aren't we getting? We're getting. Are you a food writer?
I'm an obsessive food person.
Yeah.
Food is very important to me.
Yellowish.
I'm the kind of.
Verging on yellow.
Yeah. Slightly resistant to the bites. That's sort of what. That's my stand up acts like that.
So the thing is that. Fresh mozzarella is white. You rarely find it on slice places. You only find it on the good coal-fired brick oven places, and that will get to my next criteria, which is, what's the fuel source? Coal and wood are the way to go.
So greenhouse pizzas, that's the way to do it? That you need a coal-burning oven. Like, there are certain things that we're willing to sacrifice the planet for.
Yeah.
Apparently a good slice of pizza is one of them. I mean,
you have to.
This is America.
Right. Yeah. And you have to prioritize. Okay, so you don't. First of all, you don't want to support the natural gas industry, do you?
No. Okay. Well, wait. Well,
that's the Bush family.
Yeah, but all gas is Bush, but natural is a little better. It's a little better.
But the thing is that the coal or the wood imparts a flavor to the crust that I really like, and a lot of you. New York happens to be the home of 90% of the coal-fired brick oven pizzerias.
It's so funny. I just got this image in my head of an environmentally correct pizzeria with one of those windmills on top that's generating the oven. And you're like,
it's true.
Takes 3 hours to make a pie.
It's the ultimate good. It's slow food at its slowest.
Exactly.
But now, are coal-burning ovens faster than regular?
Yes, you raise a really good point, because the coal ovens get up to 800-900 degrees.
Yeah.
The pizza ovens that you see in the normal slice places, they're set at about 450, maybe 500. So a pizza in Naples, for example, where they're all wood-burning ovens, less than 2 minutes.
Wow.
Less than 2 minutes for a pizza.
And that makes it really crispy. Bang.
Right. Whereas in a regular slice place, it'll take 10, 12 minutes to make a pie.
I'm looking forward to this book. This is a beautiful book. And let's talk about the other New York food, hot dogs.
Hot dogs. Well, you know, the thing is about hot dogs in New York is what drove everybody crazy about my story in the Times a month ago was my discovery that all the hot dogs that people love were the same hot dog made by the same manufacturer.
Oh, that's like the bottled water experiment.
Right, exactly. So it's like everybody says, well, I like Katz's hot dogs. No, I like Papaya King's hot dogs. I like Gray's papaya. They're all the same hot
dogs. They're exactly the same dog. Oh, my God. I don't need any of them, but
me neither.
But wait, so Katz's is the same as Papaya's, the same as Nathan's? No.
Yes. Well, that's not true. Until a few years ago, the same company, which is Sabret's parent company, Marathon, made all those hot dogs, including Nathan's.
Oh, so isn't that funny just to see those arrogant idiots like, no, this is the best dog here. Like, no, this one isn't. They're both eating the same one.
Exactly.
Hey, wait a minute. I got to ask a question here because I read something that I found really hard to believe. This stuff has collagen casing?
Yes. Well, here's the thing.
Wait, you're surprised there's bad stuff in hot dogs?
No, I don't eat hot dogs. But collagen casings, I wasn't
ready. Cats out of the bag. Bad stuff in hot dogs.
No, here's the thing about collagen casings. The best hot dogs are natural casing hot dogs because they give you that snap, right? That when you bite into it, you get
that. Is that the intestine?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's the sheep's intestine.
Ooh.
You know? You can't beat that.
Yeah.
Second prize.
Why don't they put that right on the package?
Yeah.
No. And so what happened was about 10 years ago, the rabbis in charge of hot dogs, the cabinet member in charge of
the
czar of hot dogs, literally said that you cannot use natural casings on kosher hot dogs.
That was Rebbe Wiener?
Right. Yeah. Rabbi Wiener. Must have been Rabbi
Wiener.
Sorry,
I had to. I had to go there.
Bada boom.
You realize that. Okay.
It was too easy.
It was. Yeah.
And so what the kosher hot dog manufacturers did was they switched to collagen casings, which is the closest thing they could come up with.
So that's where they make a thin sheet that replaces the intestine, but they make it out of nasty stuff.
Exactly.
You know, you don't even want to know what's in the thin sheet.
Right. Yes. They say it's natural protein.
Yeah, whatever that.
Whatever that means. That's a little scary.
What are the best places to get the pizza in New York? Your favorite place?
My favorite place is. Well, I was just talking about it with an audience member. One of my favorite places is called DeFara in Midwood, Brooklyn. I don't know if any of you have ever been there. It looks like a regular funky slice place, but Domenico DeMarco, it's a fascinating story. He's been open since 1963. He's the only person who's ever made pizza there in 42 years.
Really?
Whoa.
So that's dedication.
Well, there's a karma to ovens, man. You know what I mean? If it's that oven and that guy's dedicated, food is all about the passion that people put into it. If someone detaches from the food they're making, it turns to crap.
Absolutely. You know, are you a food writer? You've been holding out on me.
No, I'm a Jew. It's very important to me, the food.
But DeFara's, it's a fascinating place because he's also in his own world. If you'd been making pizza every day, 7 days a week for 42 years, you'd be in your own world too. But you walk into DeFara's, he doesn't acknowledge you. Could be 50 people waiting for slice. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'd like to...
Sorry,
you're not here. Okay, you are not here.
Yeah.
And here's the other weird thing about Domenico is that he does not use a pizza paddle to take his pizzas out. He uses his hands.
Wow, that's dedication.
Yeah, and he just takes these pizzas out and he puts them on the counter. And you're going, why didn't you just incinerate your palms?
So he abuses you, he hurts himself, and he's got the best pizza in the world.
Exactly.
The pizza nut.
All right, Ed Levine, it was great talking to you. The book is Pizza, A Slice of Heaven, the ultimate guide and companion.
Yeah.
We're giving a couple away.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you.
Food critic for the New York Times. It's great. It's great to great to have you. We'll be back with Lawton Smalls and Cindy Sheehan. We're here live at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Come on down. It's Morning Sedition, 46 bucks the hour.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
50 past the hour. Good morning. Wake up, Steve-O. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
We're broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street between Broadway, Central Park West. In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Cindy Sheehan, who's out there at the Crawford Ranch holding vigil to talk to George W. Bush. We're going to talk to her in just a few, but right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, so here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief, Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. Good morning. God's on vacation, mountain biking with W.
All right, all right.
Riding their bike.
So Lawton, our tireless leader, is on the longest presidential vacation in 36 years, man.
I know, another record.
Oh,
President
no.
George W., two terms mandate Bush, just keeps rewriting that record book, doesn't he? I think it's a well-earned breather for all the heavy lifting he does for each one of us every day.
Wait a minute.
Heavy lifting, the hard work.
Wait, you think he earned it?
10 times over, Mark, times 10.
Mm-mm.
You got to understand, everyone's always coming to him for advice.
Oh,
Cheney, Rove, Rumsfeld, those fellas can't even go to the commode without asking Bush first, you know? What about this President Bush? What about President Bush? They're like little kids. I'm exhausted thinking about it.
Wait.
Please, President.
So Bush is calling all the shots? Come on. You're telling me he's Mr. Details? Get at it.
That's it, exactly.
No.
He's the daddy there. The poor man doesn't know how to delegate. He insists on doing everything himself. His workload is superhuman. 14, 16 hours a day. 33 hours a day.
Come on.
He's not like that lazy Bill Clinton laying around the White House eating cheeseburgers and pleasuring himself all day. Lazy liberal.
So tell me something. What is it with Bush and Crawford? Why is he down there so much?
First, to get away from the Washington liberals. They smell.
Come on.
They actually admit a pungent odor. I'm smelling it in here. Y'all should put up a Renews-It in here or something.
A Renews-It. All right. What else, buddy?
Crawford's where the president goes to reconnect with the Lord, all right? They get together and have long, serious talks about things.
Oh, really? Like about what?
Well, privatizing Social Security, tax cuts, nudity on cable television, private school vouchers, intelligent design. They get real wonky about stuff.
Really?
They get very detailed.
All right, okay, so that's interesting. So what else, Vaughn?
Well,
really, this is fascinating
Bush
to me.
Bush has an almost mystical connection with the land.
Oh, stop
He's
it.
Like a horse whisperer
oh,
down
stop
there.
It.
Or an Indian wind talker,
Come
you know?
On.
He picks up vibrations from the earth and the sky, and he speaks to the four winds.
Oh,
He's
stop
frequently
it.
On a vision quest, Mark. He is part Navajo.
Oh, stop it. Come on.
I don't know if you knew that. That's the fact.
So why does the wind talker have to be there for 5 weeks, man?
Well, all right. President George W. Tudor's mandate Bush is not here to indulge your left-wing media news cycles. It's not about you. And I guess you've never cleared brush, have you?
Well, yeah. I was in Queens clearing out some brush this morning, actually.
Well, then you know
dust
it takes a long time to clear brush. Weeks sometimes. Brush grows while you're clearing it. That's what the liberal media won't tell you. All right, clearing brush is man's work.
Stop
it. Takes time.
You know what I think? You know why I think his vacations are so long?
It'll be wrong, but, you know, go on.
Because I think Bush is a figurehead. He doesn't really do anything. So no one can tell when he's not doing anything.
No.
You understand? So why not take 5 weeks off?
No,
who cares?
No.
He's such an egoist and such a narcissist that he probably thinks he does deserve it and that he does work hard.
Nope.
He took a nice long vacation right before 9/11. Remember that? Bush was asleep at the switch then. He's asleep at the switch now. When do we get a vacation from him, huh? What about that, buddy?
Mark, I never got a vacation as a kid.
Oh, no.
One time, Daddy said, "Who wants to go to Disneyland?" Knowing it was the thing I wanted to do the most in the whole world. So we got all excited and jumped in the station wagon, and he drove us to Maynard's Liquor, Guns, and Ammo.
Oh, no.
He left me locked in the station wagon with the windows rolled up, and I cooked like a baked potato.
You're making me cry.
2 hours later, he came back smelling like Jack Daniels, and he said, "So, did you have fun riding Pirates of the Caribbean?"
Oh, no.
And he laughed. It was so mean.
Oh, my God.
It was so mean.
Thought, and just take it easy, all right? I think I hit a little bit of an emotion.
World,
oh, no.
It's a small world.
Stop it. You can still go to Disneyland, okay?
What?
All right? You can still go to Disneyland.
Can I ride in a teacup?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Can I ride the Matterhorn?
Okay, yeah, you can ride the Matterhorn. All right? Just pull it together, for God's sake.
I love the Matterhorn. Oh, excuse me. Oh.
You know, I think next year President Bush ought to take 2 full months off to clear his head.
Goodbye.
Just clear the head.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
I'm crying. Yeah, Lawton Smalls. Yes. Always, enlightening and interesting to talk to old Lawton. So you want to talk about this, Riley? Texas now joins California, New Mexico, and Hawaii as states with non-white majority population.
We're taking over.
Okay. So,
why do we have to take over Texas, for God's sake?
Now, wait, are you Mexican?
I don't have to be Mexican. I'm non-white.
All right, okay.
We lump us all together. You didn't know that? No, I'm only kidding. Look, it's happening right here on the East Coast, Passaic County over in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that was a predominantly white community for most of its life.
Yeah.
It is now majority non-white. The problem I have with the way the media is covering this...
I thought you were going to say the problem I have with white people is...
No. That's next week when we go to Harlem.
All right. Okay.
All right, I got a segment planned for that.
Yeah,
no, look, the problem I have is that people tend to frame this in the most xenophobic terms possible. In other words, as places become non-white, the problem is immigration.
Right.
In other words, we're letting in too many non-whites. That's why these places are turning non-white.
Right. Well, they're going to use that as a wedge issue, as Howard Dean said.
Absolutely.
We'll talk about that a little later in the show. We are going to go to Texas on the phones, hopefully, in just a few minutes and talk to Cindy Sheehan outside of Crawford, see how her vigil is going and what's going on with her. We'll try to get her on the phone in just a few minutes, so stick around for that. It's 57 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark here at O'Neill's Restaurant on 64th Street. Good morning.
Yeah.
Morning Sedition.
It's 6 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. We're broadcasting. We're broadcasting live from the Key Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. Free coffee. Oh my God, this is crazy. This is crazy. We're waiting for Lawton Smalls to drop by. Right now we're in the middle of a conversation with Nelson George, the author of Post Soul Nation. We got books right here. We might give away a couple in a couple of minutes. Nelson George is also the producer of HBO's Everyday People, which showcases the effects of gentrification in one restaurant in downtown Brooklyn. His Brooklyn's own Nelson George, still
there
here.
There you go.
We're getting into the discussion of Biggie Smalls, who reinvigorated the East Coast rap scene, was from Brooklyn.
Right.
And was...
Not very far from here, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah. Where is he from exactly from here?
Right across Fulton Street by the A-Train on Clinton, Washington.
Oh, was it Clinton, Washington or Cumberland? Somewhere up there.
Oh, that way, yeah.
Yeah.
I have no idea myself. Exactly. A lot of different voices are saying different things, so we can... That makes perfect sense.
We sorted that.
Close.
So he was killed, gunned down 10 years ago. It's not clear who did it. There's a lot of speculation. Some people I've read say that Suge Knight had both of them killed, Tupac and Biggie. I've heard that there was two gang theories. There's a lot of theories. Which theory do you
Well, basically, believe? The Biggie-Tupac thing is the JFK for the hip-hop generation.
Okay.
They view it as conspiracy theories. Tupac's not dead.
Yeah.
There's a whole group of... He's in Mexico.
With Elvis and Jim Morrison?
Exactly.
Okay.
The truth is, it's very doubtful that Suge had anything to do with Tupac's death. He was in the car with him when he was shot. Someone sprayed the car with automatic weapon fire. It's just very unlikely that if you want to have someone killed, you'd be in the line of fire.
Fire
with
them. Right, yeah.
So, I mean, I think that goes out the window. And that's part, actually, of the Wallace lost civil suit.
This is the family of Biggie Smalls is basically going after the LAPD for a cover-up.
Right.
Okay.
And, there are things in it that are questionable. There's evidence in it that suggests there might have been something, but it's been 10 years. Unless someone comes forward and really just says, I did it, or I was involved in this conspiracy, it's going to be very hard to prove that right now.
And that happens so often.
Exactly.
But Nelson, I mean, we're talking about 10 years. We're talking about two icons of hip-hop who are both dead. and neither or none of their killers have been brought to justice. Do you ever think that'll happen? I mean, never mind the lawsuit. Do you think anyone will be charged and eventually locked up for it?
I mean, look what happened. How is it 40 years for the this case down in Mississippi, the civil rights case? Unless someone comes forward or some evidence that's not, I mean, the FBI has already signed off and said they're not investigating anymore because they think the evidence trail is cold.
Are you sure they're not just afraid of Suge Knight?
That could be it.
I don't know. I think Suge Knight's become everyone's favorite gangster. He's like become the icon of gangsterism in this country.
Yeah.
I don't think he's at all powerful, quite honestly. So I think that if someone
he said it. He said it. I just want to make sure that's clear to anyone who's listening in Los Angeles.
I think that eventually something will happen. But will both killers actually be absolutely found? I think it's doubtful right now. There's murders all over this country that happen every day that no one knows who never going to come to trial. This is going to be two of those.
But, I mean, was this a botched police investigation?
Absolutely. I think so. I mean, what they're positing is that there was an LAPD officer who commissioned someone to shoot. There's names. In the lawsuit, they named the officer. They named the shooter.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very specific. So they have some information, but is it information you can take to court and prove?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, we'll have to keep our eye on that for the next eternity as to whether or not that justice will be served in that case. Postal Nation, the explosive, contradictory, triumphant, and tragic 1980s as experienced by African Americans, previously known as blacks and before that Negroes, by Nelson George. That's
nice
a title. Big title.
Yeah,
big exactly.
title. Long title. But you looked that up?
It's my Tom Wolfe homage.
Oh, okay.
What's this book cover?
The cover says it all. You have Ronald Reagan shaking hands with Michael Jackson in the Rose Garden in 1984. That's the 80s, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a book about the 80s from a sort of an African-American point of view. But Ronald Reagan plays a very big part of it since his decisions, the neoconservative revolution, had a profound impact on what happened to black America.
What are some of the high points you talk about in the book?
High point. Well,
high-low point.
The key word is contradictory.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson, Oprah Winfrey, Bill Cosby, so many superstars. Jesse Jackson's run for president twice.
Yeah.
These were highlights. These were things that had never been accomplished by African Americans before. Same time, a huge, huge creation of what we call now the underclass.
Mm-hmm.
Crack devastated the black community. It took working class neighborhoods and made them really war zones.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the introduction of HIV and AIDS. And people forget, we tend to identify the early days of AIDS with the gays. But there was a lot of connections made. There was a whole thing about Haitians. People forget, Haitians were initially seen as the purveyors of HIV in this country, which sounds ridiculous now.
Yes.
But in fact, the Center for Disease Control even said that at one point.
Yeah,
hemophiliacs, heroin addicts, homosexuals, and Haitians.
There's some Christian groups that think you can get AIDS by thinking about it.
I wish that was true for some of them.
Nice, Nelson. Very, very nice. You know, you've written a lot about popular music throughout your career.
Right.
Where are we at? I mean, is anything any good anymore?
Well, you know what? The music industry is in chaos, and it's still trying to figure out how to market music. So what's happened is that we've gone back to the age of singles. The iPod, the downloading, we've changed from a structure of albums. The album is the definition of an artist. That the Beatles with Sgt. Pepper codified in 67. That's over.
Yeah.
It's about singles again. And so in a way it's going back to the early days of rock and roll, which is why the record companies are upset, because albums you make more money.
That's
right.
Yeah.
We've been talking to Nelson George. The book is Post Soul Nation. Can I say the title again?
Yeah.
The Explosive, Contradictory, Triumphant, and Tragic 1980s as experienced by African Americans, previously known as blacks and before that Negroes. Nelson George, thanks for being here. It was great talking to you.
Brooklyn!
We're going to be back with DMC from Run DMC, Daryl McDaniels. We're going to be back with Lawton Smalls. It's 13 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition live from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi, this is Charles Barkley, and you're listening to Marc Maron and Mark Riley. Anything less would be uncivilized. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Seventeen.
Best of the Hour. Good morning. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey.
It's Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio, broadcasting live from the Tea Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. You can still come down. There's still a little room. Having a good time. If you want to, you know, figure out where exactly it is, you can go to TeaLoungeNY.com. Coming up shortly, we've got rap pioneer Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC of Run DMC. We'll be here in a few minutes. Right now, I'd like to get into this. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in this alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now here again is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Yeah.
Is this your first time in Brooklyn?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, obviously it's my first time in Brooklyn. Uh-huh. You might as well ask if this is my first time in purgatory, my first time into the frying pan.
All right, okay.
Sizzling.
I get it. So how'd you get here, man?
I got here by the road to perdition.
Mm.
The F train.
No.
I have never been so terrified in my life. You people ride that thing every day? You know, that's how Satan travels. Oh. Underground and in the dark. In the dark.
All right. Well, what happened, Martin? I mean, what you worked up about?
Well, all right. You can imagine I was a little bit nervous on the platform down
sure.
there. I was hot, smelly, full of strange people all around me. So when the train came, I couldn't decide whether to get on or not. So I just stood there holding the closing doors for like 5 or 6 minutes. People said such hateful things.
Wow.
I've never heard such anger.
Really, imagine that. I wouldn't think that would have happened.
You know, then after I got on, I never saw such a bunch of sad, lost, liberal freaks in all my life. You know, folks, you know, not making eye contact, no blinking. You know, they were like lizards out there in the sun.
Come on.
Angry looking kids in ball caps with the brims that stick straight out. You know, straight
Come
out.
On.
What's that all about? Everybody listening to headphones, you know? I know what station they were listening to. WHELL.
Hey.
Direct contact from Beelzebub.
Well, so how do people get around on Planet Bush?
Oh, totally different story. Uh-huh. I hop in my SUV, pop in a little Toby Keith.
Uh-huh.
I got brand new rims. Believe me, my ride is pimp.
Oh.
Okay?
Sounds so
king of the world.
When you say that.
Down here, you're scurrying around like a rat.
Oh, come on.
I saw plenty of rats down here, by the way. Enormous. Oh. Thought they were going to eat me. Is that okay with
come
you
on,
folks
wait.
Living
dude,
with rats?
Dude,
is that all right?
Lawton, it isn't that bad. Would you just take it easy?
Mark, what? Okay, at one point, I saw a light at the end of the tunnel.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, it's Jesus. He's come. Take me from this evil place.
And I'm taking he didn't come, I guess.
No, Jesus is afraid of Brooklyn, too.
Oh, come on.
You know, if that weren't bad enough, somebody told me this is Gay Pride Week.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the saddest three words in the English language.
Oh, stop it.
On Planet Bush, we have Gay Shame Year.
Oh, stay there. Come on.
Every year.
That's not right. Why do you say things like that, Lawton?
Every year. Okay. A bunch of them got on the train and tried to convert me.
No, they didn't.
While I was on the train.
It's not a religion.
Minding my business.
Come on. And how do you know they were gay, Lawton?
Mark, I have the gaydar.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I know the hens from the roosters. All right? There's these skinny little boys laughing and giggling like little girls. They smelled like fancy cologne. Gay Agenda by Calvin Klein.
Oh, stop it.
Everywhere.
That's wrong.
Smelled gay.
They did not. You're making all this up, Lawton.
Oh, I wish I was. Every minute I spend in this liberal, multicultural, permissive, elitist, decadent hellhole is like some kind of bad dream I hope to wake up from. I pray that I'll wake up and look up at the ceiling at my poster of President George W. Two Terms Mandate Bush staring back at me, and everything will be back to normal. Bad dream, Dorothy. You're back in Kansas. You know what I mean?
Well,
I can't leave this place fast enough.
You know what, Lawton?
It was all a dream.
You know what, Lawton? It's too bad, buddy, because you're going to miss the parade.
What do you mean parade? What are you talking about?
The Gay Pride Parade, Lawton. It's Sunday, and it's the biggest, wildest parade ever.
Parade?
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to see all of them parade right into the sewer.
No,
that's what I'd like
Lawton,
to see.
Lawton, listen to me, man. It's fantastic. There are floats and bands.
It's no,
No.
Yes, yes, it's a great time. Everybody dances and they're singing. And
stop
they're,
it.
No, it's going to be great fun and you're going to miss it.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
Stop it.
Yes.
It's a parade?
Yes.
Sunday. Yes. Uh-huh. I want to do the parade. I want to do the parade. I wanted to be in that parade since I was 6 years old. My ticket was Saturday and now I can't go. I love Gloria Gaynor. I love Donna Summer. I made a showgirl costume with yellow ostrich feathers. People say I look just like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality, too. I look just like... I never get to do anything fun because I'm stuck on Stupid Planet Bush. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. I'm coming out. I want the world to know. Got to let it show.
Wow. Wow,
I'm coming.
Wow.
Ouch!
I didn't know,
ouch!
I didn't know you had to get that bad. I hate to stop you from singing this time, but we can be all right now. This is a big day.
Yeah.
Oh, be all right? Take it easy, man. You all right?
Rats, Mark. I saw a rat the size of a Rottweiler. It had a baby in its teeth. It was coming for me next.
We can't go back there.
Coming
now,
for
Lawton.
Me next. Rats right, everywhere.
Right. Goodbye, Lawton. We know who you are.
All right. God loves you. Deal with it.
I don't know, Riley. I think that today was a very monumental day.
I think we may see Lawton this weekend.
But wait, am I wrong, or did Lawton just come out? Did that just happen?
Well, he did the Diana Ross thing. Which,
I mean, I don't know if there's no coming back from that, I don't think.
No.
I think from here on out, this has changed everything. I knew it all along, I've got to say.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a...
Log Cabin Republican action coming up.
When is the parade? It's Sunday?
I believe it's this weekend, yeah.
It's huge. I haven't been there in a couple years.
It is a gigantic celebration.
You've been going for a long time.
For a long time.
Yeah. Now, has it grown in the years? I mean, when was the last time?
Oh, I mean, it was a relatively small thing to begin with. And there were a couple of years where they actually kind of bumped loggerheads with the city about what route they were going to take and whether or not the city was actually going to let them have it because it had expanded so quickly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, it really grew very, very fast.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to have to go down on Sunday then. Who knows what time it starts? Anybody? Noon? All right, Gay Pride Parade on noon on Sunday. I used to go to the one in San Francisco because it's like the entire city just turns into a party.
Yeah, yeah.
Do they have the Dykes on Bikes here? Open? Yeah, they do? That's great.
You name it, they got it here.
And there, I once saw a guy in San Francisco actually had like pierced nipples with nipple rings and a team of dogs hooked up to him. Nanook of the Castro. I wonder if that guy's going to be here. So let's talk about some other good news in the news. After being convicted 40 years to the day of the crime, Circuit Judge Marcus Gordon sentenced 80-year-old former KKK leader and part-time Baptist preacher Edgar Ray Killen to 60 years in prison.
Part-time preacher, full-time racist, and he's going away for the rest of his unnatural life.
So, talk to me again about they chose manslaughter because they didn't think they'd get the murder rap to stick because they don't have the evidence. Isn't that how that works?
Well, yeah. I mean, this was a case that should have been decided on state murder charges 40 years ago. Had they done it then, all of these geeks would have gone to jail for the rest of their natural lives.
And one of the guys, the other seven who were convicted in 64, who only did six, 7 years, what were they convicted of originally?
That was a civil rights violation
that
they were convicted of. Those were federal charges. The state of Mississippi never brought any murder charges against the guys that were convicted back in 67.
So that's mind-blowing that those guys are still around. And I guess, you know, justice has been served, and it's satisfying that this guy will die in jail. But it's like it's unsatisfying in the sense that there could be four or five guys that were involved in this still out there wandering around acting like they, you know, like they didn't do anything wrong.
Well, I hope that the state of Mississippi doesn't end up having to pay for his oxygen for the rest of his life. That's all I pray for.
All right, we're going to be back with DMC, Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC.
Yeah!
We're going to be back with Pendejo, the revolutionary.
Uh-oh.
It's 27 past the hour.
We're at Tea Lounge in Brooklyn. You're listening to Air America Radio. It's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark. Happy Friday.
Yeah.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're coming to you live from the Tea Lounge in Parkville, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
At Union Street and 7th Avenue. Go to TeaLoungeNY.com for some more information. DMC from Run DMC will be here shortly. But our good friend from Public Enemy fame, Chuck D, just stopped by.
Yeah.
Chuck D's got a show on Air America Sunday nights on The Real. How's that going, man?
It's great. On The Real, my co-host Gia Garrell, and we almost like treat like issues, and we treat it like pardon the interruption.
Yeah, okay.
And we learn from the manic pace of Mark and Mark.
Oh, that's just caffeine.
Well, you got to be manic at 11 o'clock at night.
You do. What's up, Brendan?
We have somebody in the audience here. I think we want to maybe get on the air.
Who's that? It's
our friend Pendejo, the revolutionary. I saw him here. Pendejo, you want to come up?
The guy from Puta?
Uh-oh.
Hey, man. Hey, it's good to see you, buddy. It's good to see you.
Pendejo.
Right. Okay. Pendejo. I'm just going to keep calling you that then. Pendejo.
Good. We need to get the name out there for...
For why? Why?
For...
Come on.
The Revolution!
Okay. So everybody here, Pendejo was in jail. There was a bit of a mix-up at the Puerto Rican Day Parade, but he's out now, as you see. And, you look a little tougher. I got to admit, you look harder.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes.
I noticed it, too. Back off, Brooklyn tea sippers! When I was on the inside, I saw things no man should see. Like Max Cady in the remake of Cape Fear, I became an animal bent on vengeance!
Dude, you were in the holding cell for like 2 hours.
See, Mark, 2 terrible hours.
Okay. All right, so you're hard now, man, and we've established that. So what's next for the revolution?
Well, Mark, yes. My recruiting efforts at my apartment building and at City Bakery weren't as successful as I'd hoped.
So it's still just you?
And Stompers.
Your Shih Tzu.
Who cannot be left alone.
Right.
Anyway, while I was surfing the internet...
Which is probably always.
Yes, pretty much, I guess. Am I telling the story here, or you?
Forgive me, Pendejo. Forgive me.
Online, I read that another Latin revolutionary group that refers to itself as Al-Qaeda.
Hey, Pendejo, the Al-Qaeda actually, Al-Qaeda is actually Middle Eastern, I believe.
Yeah.
Interesting. I suppose now that I wish I had not checked the little box that put me on their mailing list.
That's not your best idea, man, I gotta say.
Anyway, they had a brilliant idea. Recruiting online.
All right, that could work. So where are you gonna start? Did you go to some liberal websites or maybe a radical extremist bulletin boards?
Actually?
Yeah.
Nerve.com. Nerve.com will be the apparatus I will use to bring down the neocons.
Hey, you, Pendejo, you know that's a dating site, right?
On the face of it, yes.
All right, so I assume you've written some kind of Nerve profile of yourself?
Yes, as a matter of fact, you can log on to Nerve.com and search Pendejo68. That's Pendejo68. Again, Pendejo.
Okay, all right, they got it. All right. So you're looking for a certain type of revolutionary, right? Is that?
Yes.
Maybe you can tell us what your profile is, what you're looking for, Pendejo.
The type of revolutionary I'm looking for, let's see. Blonde, blue eyes... 5'11 or taller, 112 pounds or less, no exceptions. Independently wealthy, a Virgo, dancer/actress. Interests include lingerie, modeling, and volunteer work. Must also be a nurturing earth mother who enjoys spooning, cuddling, and making banana walnut pancakes on Sunday mornings. Books read must include the Narnia series, How to Please Your Man, and graphic novels like Constantine. Uh-huh. Must love small, noisy dogs who require constant attention. A tolerance for various seasonal skin rashes a plus. And I wouldn't kick her out of bed for playing the clarinet. That's not an innuendo, Mark. I quite enjoy the music of Pete Fountain.
I'm sure you do, Pendejo. So now I can see the, how you'd want someone like that, but that kind of sounds less like you're trying to recruit revolutionaries and more like you're trying to get a girlfriend. Am I...
I don't know what you're talking about. This woman would be an excellent recruit.
But you're a very, very lonely revolutionary, aren't you, Pendejo?
See, Mark.
But I've got to be honest with you, man. Those are some pretty tight requirements, and I don't really know if that woman exists, Pendejo.
Okay, I suppose I'd be willing to go up to 116 pounds. Oh, Mark, who am I kidding? I've never touched a woman. Are they soft? Do they tremble when you touch them? Do they squeak?
Oh, calm down, man. Just take it easy. You'll find someone. Just be patient, all right? Like a revolution, a relationship can't be built in a day, all right? Pendejo? So maybe Nerve.com isn't the right recruiting platform. You hear? You okay? You dig?
You're right, Mark.
Okay.
Tomorrow, Match.com. I can tell by the pictures alone, they're chubbier, less interesting, and more desperate. Viva la revolución!
Oh, man. Well, good luck, Pendejo.
You're
all right. All right. So, sorry, Chuck, we had to do that.
Sorry, I know you guys are nuts. Apologizing for it. I listen to you guys every minute. Oh, Lord.
So we were talking about Biggie and the case going to trial now. What do you think? What do you think happened?
You're going
to
ask me about Biggie?
Yeah, I am.
Nelson told you everything you needed.
That's it. No. That's all I need to know?
Yes.
All right.
Blame Nelson.
All right.
Read the book.
Well, what have you been doing? Where have you been? What's been going on?
Working on the Real.
Yeah?
Yes. Matter of fact, I think 2 weeks from now, we're going to do a special tribute to CBS 101. Because these are two stations I listen to. I work on Air America, but 101, you know, was a station I used to play, you know, have my kids in the car. Because, you know, when you tune the urban stations, it's too grown for them.
Yeah.
Even if they're teenagers.
That's
now,
a nice word, grown.
Yeah. I raised my kids on the Four Tops, you know, if they're in the back seat, you know, they're going to listen to Four Tops and Temptations and stuff like that and Allman Brothers.
Because we get the email that says, I was listening to you with my kid, and I was forced to have to explain something I didn't want to explain.
Oh, it means I'm talking to the wrong person right now, right? No, let me stop.
But did that ever happen to you when you're in the car with your kid, and they go, what is that?
Of course.
What do you say usually? That's grown stuff?
Well, number one, if the radio station got, like, past the Gavassier, and then they have the next record, it's getting hot in here, so I got to take my clothes off. Down to my neck, my crack. I mean, I got to have explanations or turn the station.
There you go.
How do you explain the Kravassier?
Yeah, exactly, right? Especially with three kids in the back all singing it.
Yeah. Right. Now, we should let the people that aren't here with us in New York know that CBS FM that Chuck's talking about just went away from oldies and went to Jack, whatever that is.
Right.
It's grown.
Exactly. And for the life of me, I don't understand what Jack means.
Three more songs than a top 40 station.
Yo, really? All the music from the 80s?
No.
Except for mine?
Three more songs.
Huh? And hate's not a word I like to use, but the music from the 80s?
You hate the music?
I hate the music from the
80s. Billie Jean?
The early 80s. No, there's 5% of the 80s music that I like, but 95% was actually the reason I started to do music in the first place, to destroy that music. So, I mean, you know, all the stuff, you know, ABC and The Cure and all that stuff, you know, like, kind of like.
Yeah, you're talking about Maron's favorite band.
Whoa. Well, I was never a Cure guy, never wore eyeliner.
Chuck, I got another question for you, though.
No, but I was a DJ. I had to play the stuff, you know. Water, Screedy Politti, you know,
Screedy Politti? Wow.
You had to play them because those are the records that you're getting. And then, you know.
They're on tour with The Cure and Split Ends.
And then the funk bands at the same time came out, and then they got all confused trying to be like, you know, post-disco. Disco was a wonderful music when it first came out, when they had real instruments. Gamble and Huff ushered that scene in.
You used to play in the middle of the night, didn't you, Riley?
I used to go to clubs in the middle.
All right.
They look a lot like the T-Lounge.
Didn't you invent the dance format?
Mark used to help make some of that stuff.
Well, a little of this.
But you know, it was one of the reasons when Run DMC came along, they ushered in a new era of basically cutting it right down to the root and being raw about the music and
And they kind of really, Run DMC was the group that actually made rap music legitimate from an album standpoint.
Oh, yeah, and it was, I mean, the rhythms were just extraordinary. The stuff they used, how they put that stuff together. But, you know, it seems like there's almost a renaissance of some of the old school hip hop guys. I mean, Dr. Dre's got a new CD coming out. DMC's got a new CD coming out. Master P's got a new CD coming out. What is everybody trying
Let me stop.
don't badmouth old person.
Where'd that come from?
Well, I don't, you know, really, I'm one of those cats that I don't care how much money you make. What does your money got to do with, you know, me liking the music? Yeah. People up there like saying, wow, so-and-so went platinum, so I must buy it. I'm like, that's programming, and I just think that, you know, Alpo goes, you know, double platinum if you want to count dog food cans every 2 weeks. You don't see the owner of Alpo walking around with diamond-encrusted dog food cans around the neck talking about, we went double platinum on dog food this week, so you got to get a couple of cans, even if you ain't got a dog.
So we're talking to Chuck D. We're
you
gonna
like it or you don't.
Yeah. We're going to come back with Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC.
Yeah.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, live from the Q Lounge in Brooklyn. It's Air America Radio. It's 44 past the hour.
Morning Sedition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
This thing is 49 past the hour. We're listening to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Perry. That's Mark Riley. We're broadcasting live from the Q Lounge in Park Slope, Brooklyn, at Union Street and 7th Avenue. What an amazing show it's been. This is Air America Radio. We got Chuck D here hanging out. And right now, he's the DMC of the multi-platinum hip-hop trio. That was Run DMC. He's got a new CD, Chex, Thugs, and Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
Coming out in the fall, and a new single, Machine Gun, which is a cover of Hendrix's song, being released this summer. Please welcome DMC.
Hello.
Daryl McDaniels.
What's happening? What's the deal?
Wow.
What's happening?
Legends. Right here. How are you, man?
I'm very good, very good, very
good. So you're going to do a cover of Hendrix's song?
Yeah, I did a record for the troops over there in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Because and the record, it isn't anti-war, it isn't pro-war. It's about the human side, that it's a war over there. Those are our brothers and sisters. Those are people's sons and daughters over there. People tend to forget that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Very, very true.
So, yeah.
No, I was curious because, you know, Machine Gun is a song that very few people try to copy.
Yeah, I know.
It's one of those songs that, like, you know, I came up listening.
Well, actually, like, when I told people that I was going to do it, everybody was like, you know, well, you did Walk This Way, but how are you going to pull that off? Because, I mean, that is an amazing song, and if you listen to the version that Hendrix did, he did it live.
Yeah.
He just walked up to the microphone and was like, I'm going to do this for the soldiers over in Vietnam and over in Chicago and also the soldiers. Also, the record that I did is also about the soldiers over here dying every day. It's sort of like a semi-tribute to Jam Master Jay Biggie because the rappers and the MCs, they are soldiers over here fighting for, you know, equality and a righteous way of life over here for us. So it's not only about soldiers that are in the military. It's about soldiers like Chuck D and even you guys out here fighting for us and spreading the knowledge. So when I did the record, though, it was like, you know, everybody was like, okay, how are you going to pull that off? Because you really don't mess with a Hendrix song. But I didn't take nothing away from his music, because without that, like, it's not even really a remake. It's actually, it's Hendrix music with me just giving my commentary, bringing it up to date. Because when you look at the Iraqi war, the war in Iraq, 50 years from now, when they do the documentaries on A&E and Bravo and the History Channel, what's really bugging me out is, with all the power that the hip-hop world has now, and even rock and the musicians and the entertainers, there's nobody from this generation giving those folks over there something when they're sitting with their grandfather, I mean, with their grandchildren saying, I was in the war. When they play those documentaries 50 years from now, there's nobody who has the power giving a music something to embrace. So I was like, wow. So when I seen what Hendrix did, I was like, okay, I'm going to do what Hendrix did for the soldiers in Vietnam, but bring it up to date now.
Yeah.
It's optimistic, and I'm glad to hear the hope there, because it's sometimes when I think of the media 50 years from now, they're just going to be like, well, there was no history before the Republicans took over the world. That's my biggest fear. So, yeah, you're also involved in the Live Aid concerts.
Oh, yes. This, the other day, I got called back. I was at the first Live Aid. That tells you how old
really?
I am. Yeah, I was at the first Live Aid. Run DMC, we performed at the first Live Aid. And since I have this new music out, Bob Geldof was like, you know, my people called and said, yeah, let's try to get DMC up there to do his new record. You know, they're thinking, you know, record sales and all of that. But for the cause, I always do everything for the cause. You know,
so which one are you doing?
I'm doing the one in Toronto.
Okay.
I tried to get on the one in Philadelphia, but it was so overbooked. But I think it's kind of cool to go over to Toronto and bring some of the energy and power that I have here to go over there and represent them, make
absolutely.
Them feel part of it. You know
yeah, absolutely.
Saying?
Toronto's a great city.
Yeah,
it really is.
You two guys are icons of this music. You've been in this game a long time.
Yeah.
What do you think of what you're hearing now out of hip-hop?
What do I think? Well, it's so crazy. I mean, I don't say this. People always ask me this. I really, really don't really listen to hip-hop anymore. And it's not because I don't like it. It's because the music and the ideas and the images and the foundation of it, it doesn't have nothing I could connect with. Really, with all I listen to,
really?
you'll hear it on my album, Chex Thugs and Rock and Roll, I listen to classic rock. Now,
okay.
A lot of my hip-hop people always say, TMC, why do you listen to classic rock? That's old music. But I tell them it's not old to me because I never heard of a lot of it. Like Pink Floyd, Dylan, Doobie Brothers, Creedence Clearwater Revival. It's incredible music that you can listen to now and relate to it. And what
my
I
whole
say
collection.
About that is, the thing about hip-hop right now, it's really talking about stuff that's not important. Like, hip-hop is supposed to be about the club and the party, and you could talk about, you know, the women and the cars, but also at the same time, you got to give a broad picture of the world. On my album, everybody has issues in life, whether it's politics, personal. My album's really personal. Like, I went through a time of suicidal thoughts. Like, my life has been crazy. I found out I was adopted 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I found out that I'm Dominican, so with hip-hop right now, it's, my whole, like, I really have that thing when you say you think you know, you have no idea. Because what people know about me, everything Chuck knows about me and y'all know about me is all I know about myself. So, but on my album, what I tried to do was talk about the messed up educational system, the messed up politics. I try to talk about stuff like, yo, my son is messing up in school. He's 10 years old. What are you doing? I try to talk with stuff that's going to relate to people, whether they're 3 or 300
human
years
stuff.
Old.
Yeah, yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So the hip-hop today, is not really motivational and inspirational anymore.
Mm.
It's just a bunch of, you know, I ain't even going to say corny-ass records. It's just a bunch of stuff that DMC can't really relate to. And the classic rockers like Dylan and Lennon. Like, think about it. Dylan, Lennon, Springsteen, all those groups from the 60s. When there was a war, they made music.
They talked about it. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
You just made Dan Pashman very, very happy because you mentioned Bruce Springsteen.
Those are all my records. Do you agree, Chuck? Where do you stand on that?
Well, hip-hop started from the use of records, and it started from the research of musicians. And once it gets away from that, you know, it turns into something else. So, you know, DMC's my hero, so.
Right on. We got to get going. We got to get out of here. Thank you, DMC.
Thank you.
Joe McDaniels, Chuck D.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank the staff, Jonathan Steele, Greg Wolf, Oren Arnon, Michel Harari, all here from the Tea Lounge. Go to TLoungeNY.com. It was great to have you. Thank you, Brooklyn. Thank you, listeners. You've really made this a great show for us. Gifford Miller, give a round of applause for Gifford Miller, Nelson George, rap pioneer Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC, Chuck D. Mark Wright.
It's been fun, man.
I will be at Bananas in New Jersey. The beautiful state of New Jersey, tomorrow night in Hasbrook Heights. If you'd like to come down for that, and obviously next week we will be here in town all week long.
Yeah, now we got the one-year anniversary of the handover of power in Iraq coming up next week. We're going to talk about it. We're going to have some live music. We've got some comedy. We got all of this. The morning tradition. Have yourselves a great day. Have yourselves a great weekend, man. It's been great.
It has
has been great, Riley.
All right.
Morning Sedition.